Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast.
Everyone has at least one good story.
And some of us have stories that are just to the left of normal.
We're interested in the ones that push the boundaries of what we can perceive.
Stories that defy explanations.
Stories with an air of mystery.
Stories we might not share.
For fear of being thought of differently.
But don't worry. We're all friends here. So, what's your weird story? We have a trigger warning for today's episode. This episode has adult content. It has discussions of a frank nature on sex and human sexuality. Listener's discretion is advised. Hello, Weirdsville. It's time, once again, for the What's Your Weird Story podcast. Hi, I'm Adam Beebe. I'm one of your regular hosts. And with me, as always, is your other regular host, as long as he's had his bran, muffin, and fiber, Mr. Barry Johnston. Hello, Barry. How are you?
Hello, Professor. How are you? I'm feeling regular, as it were, today. I've had my bran and fiber, so I'm doing good, man. How are things with you?
Fantastic, dude. I'm glad to hear that, oh, smiling sensei. I forgot to slide your official title in there. I am doing well as well. This is the What's Your Weird Story podcast, where we talk to people about the amazing, spectacular, weird, unusual, fantastic, often hilarious, often scary, often humorous and adventurous and shocking stories, true stories from their own lives, told by the people who lived them. And Barry, we have a guest today, but before we speak to our guest, you have it's kind of a weird story, but not really too weird. Why don't you tell us about your weekend?
Yeah, well, it's weird for any dads out there. My daughter, Kira, got married to Bailey. So Kira is officially Kira Cross, which is weird to say, her new last name. But yeah, we had a great weekend, man. She got married outside of Springfield, Missouri. And I know a lot of people were like, why Springfield when you guys are from Oklahoma? But She just found this wonderful venue online and went and checked it out, and she fell in love with it. And so that's where we did it. And it was wonderful, man. Anyone who's ever been involved in like trying to put a wedding on knows how stressful it can be. Mm-hmm. I stayed out of it as smart.
Very smart move.
But you know, with my background in doing events and tour managing and all that kind of stuff, when we showed up, I quickly found out just how chaotic everything was. And we had hired a wedding planner, but she wasn't the best. And on top of that, she kind of had this attitude, you know, like I'm the boss, you know what I mean?
Yes.
That kind of vibe. Yes. And
that it's her wedding.
Yeah. It just kind of was weird. And like, but she would forget things. Like, so we show up and like, so we leave on Wednesday and we get to the bed and breakfast. So we had a bed and breakfast, which was kind of cool, man. Like we had a whole, like, I don't know what you'd call it. It was three houses that we occupied the whole wedding party. And so we show up and everything's great. And we go out and we do things. Branson, Missouri is not very far. So we kind of make a trip on Thursday. We go down to Branson, hang out. We had some little kids, you know, that were a part of the family Branson's a fun town for kids,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's very cheesy.
it's a tourist trap.
It's a tourist trap.
You know, it's fun.
So we did that. We had a great time. Friday, we went to this is going to blow people's minds that don't know, because I didn't know. But we went and we toured the Bass Pro Museum and Aquarium.
Okay.
Which I wasn't expecting too much. You know, you pay $43 for this thing.
Wow.
And but I was blown away at how well it was done, man. It took about 2 hours to get through the whole thing. But the aquarium part was impressive, man.
Yeah.
They had sharks and stingrays and, I mean, everything that you could possibly think of. And so that was fun and it was entertaining. We were able to kind of, you know, kill some time. Mm-hmm. And then that night we had the dinner for the wedding party that was, hosted by, my son-in-law, which is also weird to say. So, his parents were nice enough to put on this dinner for us. And that's where we did the speeches, you know, the toasts.
Yes.
Thank God, because I don't know how I would have done it in front of everyone at the wedding. So I was happy to get that out of the way. And I held it together pretty good until the end, and then I broke down a little bit. But it was so nice, man, because we had both families there, you know, the best man, the maid of honor, and you get to hang out and tell stories and you get to know each other. And I gotta say this, that she married into such a great family. They're kind of like us. Like, we're kind of crazy. Like, we like to have fun. We like to joke a lot. We like to have laughs, and it was just wonderful. You know, my son-in-law has surrounded himself with some just wonderful friends, and they all get along. And, like, you know, Kira is friends with all of the, you know, their girlfriends and wives and stuff. And it was magical, man. It was a really, really wonderful night. And then we roll into Saturday, and I knew Saturday was going to be a little bit chaotic because, you know, you're trying to get the venue set up. The venue was outside of Springfield, about 20 miles. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it was down in like a meadow. This beautiful property that the lady who owned it, her family, it was in her family for like 75 years. And they had a pond that was spring fed, beautiful setting. And so they got married right on the water. And so, like, you're sitting in your chairs and you're looking at them and they're in front of the pond or the lake. But it was a little bit chaotic because I had to get the DJ set up during the day. And of course, this is a good one. So the wife, she puts out all the things that me and my boys are supposed to take to the venue, right?
Right.
Okay, so we load them up. Take him to the venue. And then we get a phone call that we need to bring all the flowers back. So I'm like, okay, well, there's some flowers that are sitting in like boxes, mm-hmm, with other things in them. So are we supposed to bring the whole box back, or are we just needing flowers, right? There's no cell phone service, very spotty cell phone service. So I'm trying to like call FaceTime to make sure that we're grabbing the right stuff, right? I can never really figure out what it is that they're needing. So I just bring everything, all the anything that has a flower in it, I bring back. Of course, I don't bring back the one thing that they need.
Right.
Because that thing was not in the box, right? So anyway, it turns into a little bit of a thing. We get back to the bed and breakfast. We get ready, and I was pretty nervous, I'll be honest with you, man. Like, I was ready to get it going. And we did what they call the first reveal or whatever for the dad to, you know, so I can see her, you know, before. We did all that there at the bed and breakfast. So, like, one cool thing is my sons both brought their guitars. So we just kind of hung out and you know, sort of killed time by like playing guitar, which is wonderful. It was just a nice way to start this thing. Yeah, so
that is nice, dude.
Yeah. Then we go down and we do the reveal where she's, she's getting ready, and I just fucking lost it, dude.
Oh, I'm sure you did.
Oh my God. I started crying before I even walked into the door. It was just like, it just hit you, man. You know,
yeah.
like
yeah,
you're
yeah,
gonna,
yeah.
you're gonna see your little girl. And, so I had to put myself together. She started crying. She got mad at me because I made her cry. And
right.
thankfully the makeup artist put on a waterproof makeup for her. So yeah. she didn't yeah. look a mess. And it's funny because that morning we were driving around. I was driving around with my son-in-law, and we were going to get some. He wanted to go to this tobacco shop and get some cigars for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, "How you doing?" He goes, oh, "I'm doing pretty good, man. I'm not really that nervous and stuff." And I go, "Just wait till you see her, you know." And then you walk down the aisle and you see all those people, you know. And he just they did their first reveal and they took some pictures of the bed and breakfast, and he was a mess. He was worse than I was, man. He couldn't compose himself for the pictures, so that took a little extra long. But then we get to the venue. It starts about 5:30, and it was awesome because a lot of our family from Wisconsin, where my wife is from, were able to make it, which was wonderful. My family was all able to make it. And so we get to, you know, the ceremony, and I'm walking her, you know, down, and Nikki is, it was cool because we did both parents. It's usually the dad gives away, you know, the bride, but we did both parents, and of course, crying the whole time. The ceremony was short and sweet, beautiful. It's like 10 minutes, maybe 10, 15 minutes. He made Kira cry, Bailey, because he couldn't. He was just a mess, and Kira never really cries. So the fact that he got her to cry was kind of a win, you know. So we finished up. It was a beautiful, beautiful wedding, man. We ended up doing a little cocktail hour for a little while, so we all got to hang out and everybody got to catch up, all the families, and then we went and we did the after party, the dance. Which, you know, we did the daddy-daughter dance, which I was a mess for.
What did you dance to?
So I found there's a song called I Hope You Dance, which is a country song. But but I found a version of Chris Stapleton singing it just by himself with an acoustic guitar, which is just a beautiful song. And it kind of encapsulated everything you want to say, you know. And the fact that she's a dancer, it was just like a perfect. I have been... This has been a 6-month process for me, and it took me so long because I would just cry at everything, man. Every song I would listen to, man, I was just like, you know, it was tough, but it was wonderful. And then another nice moment was Kira danced with my son-in-law's dad. He's always wanted a daughter. He's got two boys, and he just loves her so much. And so she dedicated a part of that for him. And I, just, you know, was a wreck. But it was awesome, man. And it was like, it was only like 2 hours, you know. So it was just a party, man. And I was so proud of my family showed up, dude. And we threw down, man. We all of us danced and just had such a great time, man. So it was wonderful. I appreciate everybody coming. And it was amazing. And now I feel like, we're through it. And we accomplished it, and it's good, man. So that was my weekend, man.
There you go, dude. That's awesome, man. I'm so happy for you and Nikki, and of course for Kira. I remember meeting Kira the first time I met her was whenever you guys at your wedding.
Yep.
When you were and she was 2 years old.
Yep.
And she and I became fast best friends.
Yeah.
And she's just a pistol, and she's had so much character and just such a little sweetheart.
Absolutely.
And it's just, you know, seeing her grow up to be your little girl and now, you know, being a woman and a young woman, and it's just, you know.
Yeah.
It's really cool, dude.
Yeah, so it's amazing. Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Happy for you all.
Thank you.
You know, I mean, it's.
Thank you.
My extended family.
So, yeah, you know. Thank you. Absolutely, man. But to pivot, we're going to pivot into, we're going to get into some, this is a pretty great one. Awesome.
Yeah, this is really great. We had a lot of great conversation out of this story. with our guest, Rachel from Philly. And again, just to reiterate, we want to give a parental advisory sticker here at the front because of very frank, not graphic per se discussion of sex, but this is an episode that is about sex and human sexuality and so all of the things that are wrapped up in there. And it starts off with a really great story, and Rachel was a great guest. So without further ado, joining us from Philadelphia, the Philadelphia cheese capital of the world, is Rachel. Rachel, thank you so much for joining us. What's your weird story?
Thank you for having me. I have a story that every time I tell it, people are like, wait, can that actually happen? And I think I give people a new like fear.
All right.
I'm going to tell you guys about the time that I gave my ex-boyfriend a sex headache from a blowjob.
All right. Fantastic. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
And I told him, you know, maybe like 6 years ago, the last time I saw him, I was like, can I tell that story to people? It's like really funny. He was like, as long as you don't say my name, you know, go for it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
This was before I moved to Philly. So this is actually about 10 years ago now.
Okay.
I'm aging myself. But and so I had this boyfriend. I was in East Lansing, which is where I'm from, Michigan, and he was in the Detroit area. We were doing long distance, and he was staying with his older brother, who is a doctor. I assume he still is a doctor. Mm-hmm. Before we were both going to move to Philadelphia together. And, you know, when you do long distance, I only saw him on the weekends, so we didn't see each other super frequently. So we pretty much got to it as soon as I got there, made sure that his, you know, everybody was out of the way.
As you should.
It's like I haven't seen you in a while. Yeah. So
It only makes sense.
And so we jumped in the shower, and I was going down on him, and all of a sudden he kind of just started to like fall over a little bit, and I like grabbed him by like the legs and was like, should I keep going? Do you want me to like, what's going on? Is that like good? Is that like what, you know, is happening here? He was like, no, stop. And I was like, okay, geez. Okay. So we got him out of the shower and he was like, I need to lie down. I'm in the most pain I've ever been in my entire life. And I think that in general, this is a stereotype, right? But I think that men, and this man in particular, aren't the best at handling pain.
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah.
He would get a cold and it would be like the end of the world. And so
of course,
when he says I'm in, you know, immense amounts of pain, I'm like, okay, it probably feels like my period cramps do.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Right.
I'm sure he's fine.
So, you know, did you ask him if you had, you know, maybe scraped with your teeth or something, if that's what caused all of this?
I knew I didn't do that.
Okay. Girl's got skills. I'm sorry for questioning.
Like he was into it and he seemed excited. And so I was just like, what's happening over here? And I was like, this is like clearly a you problem because I'm fantastic. but yeah, we ended up, he was laying in the bedroom in like immense amounts of pain. We had to turn the lights off because even just like the light coming in hurt his eyes and it was excruciatingly painful.
Wow.
And so at a certain point he was like, we need to go to the ER. And again, I was like, this is like fucking, this is stupid. Like, this is really stupid. You're fine. Just a little headache. You're fine. You know? And he's like, no, it's the worst pain I've ever been in my entire life. So the problem is that my car had been blocked into the driveway by his car and he drives a stick shift.
Oh.
And I do not know how to drive a stick shift.
Oh no. Oh no. Oh,
so I am like, I ask him, I'm like, are you okay to drive? Like hoping, fingers crossed, he's going to say yes. And he's like, no, I'm not okay to drive. I was like, oh Lord. Like, so the hospital's just a few blocks away, but not close enough to walk.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, I guess I'm doing this.
I'm learning how to drive stick.
High pressure situation.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, sticks are. This is not a good day for you and sticks. I mean, yeah, all around. Yeah, yeah. So, you know.
And I think that just like when I tell people the story, they're like, "This isn't real. Like, there's no way that like this happened on top of this other thing." I'm like, "No, it did." And yeah, so we get into the car, and of course, I just stall the car out like every few seconds. It's just like,
right, yeah,
lurching, start, stop, start, stop. Yeah. And he is like screaming at me, being like, "You're killing my car. You're ruining my car." And he's like in massive amounts of pain and he's just losing it. And so we get to the hospital. I like park the car in front of the ER. We walk in and there's like this like, what do they call them? Orderlies. There's this orderly who's like on a smoke break and he's like, "Did you just like, stall out your car a bunch of times?" And I'm like, I clearly am walking into the ER here with this person who like can't even walk. He's in so much pain. This does not seem like the right time to tease me about the fact that I stalled out the car multiple times. And so we walk into the ER and we are sitting down. They bring him back right away. They give him some morphine. And I'm like, wow, like we're really like, okay.
Yeah.
Big guy over here. And then he ends up telling his brother used to work at this particular hospital. So his brother comes in.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, this just is.
Oh, no.
So when you hold up when you get there, after you talk to the orderly, when you were checking in, how did that go? What did you how was that explained?
He didn't say a word about it. He just said, "I have this like massive headache." And I said to him, "Dude, like, don't you think it's important that people know like what was happening at the time, so that like if in case there's a connection, right?" And so he was like, no, it's not important. It's not important." So they're trying to figure out, they're asking all these questions, his brother's there, and we're trying to figure out like, okay, like what happened to like make this like come on so suddenly? And then they finally ask the question, "Well, what were you doing at the time?"
Yeah.
And he goes, well, he like looks at me, looks at his brother, whose house we're staying in.
It gets better.
And goes, "Well, sir, I was engaged in sexual activity at the time." And that's the thing that makes the doctors go, "Oh, we know what this is." And like, like he and I are like, "Wait, what? So there's this thing, it's called coital cephalgia.
Okay.
And basically what it is, my like rudimentary understanding of it, is that when you are near the point of orgasm, sometimes what can happen is like a blood vessel can burst in the brain.
Oh, wow.
Or something along those lines. And it causes like a massive headache.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so then I'm like, okay, like I really like fuck this guy up. Like,
yeah,
this is less funny now. And they go, "Okay, now that we know what it is, we're going to have to give you a spinal tap to make sure that no blood got into the spinal column."
Oh my God.
So they pull out a needle that is, I kid you not, like this big.
I've heard horror stories.
Like, yeah, like
it's huge.
Like yeah.
A foot long is what you're, yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is huge. And so I'm like, oh my gosh. And so they stick it into the base of his spine and, you know, pull out the spinal fluid to test it. It's clear. It's like 3 a.m. at this point.
Oh,
like,
oh
my God. And I'm like,
a spinal tap is also extremely painful. So,
yeah.
Wow.
I do got to say, he took it like a champ, though.
Yeah.
He winced a little bit, but he did take it like a champ. But after the spinal tap was done and you know, he got the go ahead to go home. And luckily, he drove the stick shift home.
Hey, that's good.
I didn't have to do that. but I looked at him and I said, "So, I don't know if this is like too soon, but like, I guess I kind of like really like blew your mind, huh?" And he was like, "That is not funny. That is not funny. That is not funny at all." And I was like, "Are you sure?" Like,
that's pretty funny.
Like, oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did not appreciate it very much. Years later, you know, I met up with him for drinks, you know, after we had broken up, and, you know, he was like, that was very funny. Like, that, I just love to appreciate
that.
That
is amazing. I'm sure that his family had a hell of a, just roasted him or you about that forever. I mean, how that could play out and his brother being there is hilarious, man.
It was so many layers of insanity.
That is hilarious.
So, was he a little gun shy?
As of the last time I saw him and we had this conversation, it had been like 5 years since this incident, and it hadn't happened with me or with anybody else that he had been with. It was a one-time thing, but it can happen. It can happen to both male, female, whatever gender, sex you are. It can happen, and it's apparently extremely painful.
Wow. So what happens if they find blood in your spinal cord? Do they have
have no idea. They probably have to drain it in some way.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a doctor.
Yeah. I have never heard of that. And that is mind blowing.
But you
I mean, it's kind of, you're the champ. You could say that you.
That is, and that's what I'm able to say. I'm just like, all right, like, I'm so good that joke.
That's such a, his body paid you like even a higher compliment than he normally would have in this situation.
Right.
You know, men are always going to pay you a compliment physically, no matter what you're doing with them down there.
Reinforcement.
But when you're bursting everything in when it's bursting on the insides too.
Yeah.
That's obviously.
That's amazing.
You know.
It actually kind of led to my podcast. I have a podcast as well.
Okay.
It's called the Wine, Dine, and 69 podcast.
Oh, nice.
Excellent.
Nice.
And I kind of just realized I was in like a girl group of like female empowerment, and I shared this story, and people were like, we need your tips and tricks. If you're that good, then we need your tips and tricks. So, and I was like, I don't know, just like a lot of like spit and you be sure to use your hands at the same time. Like, I don't know.
So you're part of the Hawk Tua school. Yes, is that what it is?
Exactly. The sloppier, the better, really, is my advice.
Right.
I did this like live where I kind of shared some like toys or like some various things, and I'm not a sex educator. I wasn't at the time, like in any way, shape, or form. But after I went live on there, I had so many girls from around the world reaching out to me, who were too shy to like ask questions in the live, who wanted to talk to me about their own pleasure, who wanted to talk to me about like what they thought was wrong with them, who wanted to talk to me about how to please their man. And it just made me go, wow, like there are people like in different parts of the world that do not have access to this information.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And so I started a podcast.
That's awesome. So awesome.
I gotta thank my ex for that.
Yeah, man. Good.
Yeah.
Good.
It's also your schools that brought you there as well. So, you know.
Right. Sure.
It's not just Tim. So.
Right. That's true. Yeah. I was going to ask how often you tell that story. And obviously you've told it on a big platform. So That's cool. Do you have guests on, or how what's what's your format?
Yeah, the format is I have a theater background. I went to school for English and theater, so I'm writer, actor, singer, an aspiring intimacy coordinator, which is a pretty cool thing that's related to the whole sex and consent scene as well. Mm-hmm. So I share stories of, you know, people, everyday people who have something to share, kind of like what you guys do here.
Yep.
But I also have experts on. So, you know, I've had dominatrixes on, I've had different sex workers. I had a brain doctor on, a neurologist, and asked her to explain in more detail like what happened in the brain when, you know, happened to my ex. We talked about like what sex looks like in the brain and what pleasure looks like and desire. So I really see the value, not just in getting information from experts, but also in hearing and standing witness to normal people's stories.
Sure.
And it's great for me because I don't claim to be an expert. You know, I've been to therapy since I was really, really little. I have, you know, I know my own body very well, but that's what I come from, really. And so I get to learn along with the listener.
Great.
And that's the best part.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also a very good, it's a good idea. It's good base, good for a podcast. Mm-hmm. Being sex positive, especially for women, mm-hmm. because, you know, our Western societies, which is typically a little bit more open than others, it's still very repressed, depending on where you are. Especially, we grew up in a very, very repressed place in Oklahoma. And yeah, so, you know, being able to speak about female empowerment and sexuality, and, you know, and pleasure, being, you know, and finding pleasure and knowing how to receive and give, you know, I mean, that's, I think that's a very important thing, mm-hmm. To be out there and to get that information out there. And I think that's super awesome that, that you've started the podcast. Yeah. I'm gonna listen to it. Are boys allowed? Is there a sign that says no boys allowed? Or
No.
Okay. Cool.
I have boy guests. I have lots of, I try to cover, you know, I'm a heterosexual white woman, so I can only like speak from my own experiences, obviously, mm-hmm. but I do try to have guests on who are more representative of different types of people. Yeah,
cool. That's awesome.
Cool.
That's awesome.
There is, as human beings, you know, we should take delight and we should understand how we can give to a partner. And mm-hmm. Those conversations that you have, it's always that thing of like, okay, how I've been married for, this year will be 23 years.
Wow.
Actually in a couple of days. Yeah.
Wow.
And I, you know, I've told her this many times, but like, I've been trying to figure her out for 24 years, you know, and there's that thing where it's like, you know, there's something about meeting someone and being in a relationship, you know, we're monogamous, I'm always chasing her. I'm always trying to figure out, like, because women are complex creatures, and
men are not.
We're fairly simple. You know, yeah.
It definitely goes back to, sorry to interrupt. It's definitely, you know, cats and dogs, you know. Women are very, you know, they're cats, obviously, because they have a very complex emotions that they don't always wear on their faces, where dogs are just like, hey, what's up? Let's hang out. I'll be your new best friend. Let's go drink out of the toilet.
Right.
You know, right. That kind of thing. So.
Right. I can remember, you know, and I'll share this because I don't have any qualms about it. But I remember before we got married, and maybe everyone goes through this, but it's like you have that thing where it's like, okay, can I be with one person for the mm-hmm. rest of my life? You know, and what I found is that yes, it is possible. And if you are devoted and devoted to making that relationship work, you have to learn how to please that person, not just sexually, but just like in your everyday life. Like, and I think it's important that you try to evolve like that, and you try to figure out, you know, okay, like the thing that brings me pleasure when it comes to sex and those things aren't the things that necessarily bring her pleasure. So how can I modify myself and try to put my needs to the side in order mm-hmm. to fulfill the needs of someone else? And those conversations are important to have. And I think that we are lucky to live in a time when we have podcasts, we have these mm-hmm. things that we can you know, we can, I know for me, it's helpful to hear a woman's point of view when it comes to these things. 'Cause you know, women's bodies are so different from woman to woman. You know, the things that bring pleasure, to one woman may not necessarily do that, for another, and trying to listen and trying to understand, you know, that is, it's a big part of it, you know, being a good listener, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, the statistic, I think it is that less than 25% of women can come from vaginal intercourse.
Right.
The majority of women or people with vaginas need to have some sort of clitoral stimulation happening at the same time or like completely separately to be able to experience the big thing. Now, that doesn't mean, I think it's really important for, this is something I talk about on like the podcast all the time. I find that a lot of men are very focused on performing and finishing and making, making her finish. Right.
Right.
Yeah. And like, I think we're really thinking about that the wrong way because no one like makes you finish. It's not like, it's just, I was just having a conversation with my partner that the biggest erogenous zone for a woman is the one between her ears.
Right.
Like I might be ready to have sex physically, but it doesn't necessarily need to end in that. It's about connecting with your partner. It's about feeling good. It doesn't need to end in an orgasm for one or both parties for it to be worth doing. And so I think that we really need to change the way that we think about sex and pleasuring other people because just being with the person and being present and paying attention to them is pleasurable.
Sure.
I think it's, well, communication is obviously the biggest thing. But I think with men, the making them finish is because men obviously, again, have you can tell when we're finished. You can tell
more straightforward.
When we have arrived, you know, you know, yeah, it's straight there. You know, that's the biology of it is just boom. And then, you know, it's done and we know it. We've finished. We crossed the line, the finishing line. But, you know, and men are, you know, we are in general not as knowledgeable about women's biology and about women's needs and all of these things. And it, again, like Barry said, it varies partner to partner, person to person. You know, it is that kind of thing where you have to like, you do have to be like, accept, or you have to learn what the needs for your partner, whether it's whoever the partner is, whether it's female, male, same sex, different sex, intersex, whatever. You know, it's you have to learn, you know, what it is. And that's where it all boils down to. The communication is key, and it's not necessarily just about, you know, finishing, crossing the line, because there's all sorts of different lines that can be crossed.
Absolutely.
That, you know, they could finish or whatever.
Yeah. What was your, if I may ask, what's your upbringing? Because the way that we grew up in a very conservative part of the world. And sex was always taboo. And what that left you with, especially when we grew up, was we had to discover it ourselves. And for young people back then, it was like, hey, my friend said that sex is like this. And so you're like, oh, okay, that's the way that it is. And then inevitably, somebody's dad would have some magazine that we
would,
what we would find. And so we grew up in this time period where we, you know, we objectified women and what we were looking at, we thought was what we were supposed to be doing. And, but that came from the way that we grew up. I couldn't ask my dad's sex talk to me was when I was 17 years old and we're driving down the road and he said, son, do we need to have the sex talk? And I had been sexually active for years by then, you know? And I'm like, no, Dad, we're good. But that's just the way it was. You know, it wasn't open. It wasn't open.
Yeah, I never got from either one of my parents. I never got the sex talk. I really,
really,
You know, it's because where we grew up, very small town. You know, it's like 3,000 people, something like 3,000 to 5,000 people. Oh, Oklahoma,
Bible Belt
of the Bible Belt, very conservative. You know, I was raised just by my dad, you know, and I would see my mom every, you know, on the weekends or during the summer whenever she moved out of state. But, you know, we weren't never close enough to have that kind of, you know, talk really. And my dad just, you know, just never, you know, I mean, I knew the biology of it, but I didn't know the, you know, I mean, I didn't know the intimacy part of it or whatever. And even the, with the biology part of it, I learning in the schoolyard very young. I remember, Barry, I don't know if you remember this, but we had a friend, we'll call him Jay. one day at recess, Jay comes and tells our group of friends, he's like, guys, I know what a boner is for. Because we knew we had boners. We didn't know where, why they happened or whatever, you know, what you did with them or, you know, there was still a mystery. But Jay comes in, and I'm talking, this is like third or fourth grade.
Yeah.
And he comes in, he says, what happens when a man and a woman are going to have sex? And we're all like, None of us knew what sex was. We're still like, He's like, when they're going to have sex, the man has to get a boner to put it in the girl's vagina. We're like, okay. You know, and then the next day, he comes back and recess. He's like, guys, you're never going to believe this. I just found this out about when a man, you know how a guy has to get a boner, right? And we're like, yeah, you told us yesterday. Yeah, we all, you know, and that's for a boner for sex. And he's like, well, a girl's got to get something similar, and it's called a stumpy. And so for years.
I do remember that.
Wow.
For years, I thought that, you know, when a woman was extremely aroused, that she would get, you know, I guess a stumpy, hardened, I don't know what it was, but that's what I, and of course, now for years, again, you know, we're in third, fourth grade, so, I mean, probably until we had, like, you know, some kind of, you know, where I eventually probably looked up sex in a medical.
Right.
You know, because I wouldn't get it in for anywhere else. But yeah, the stumpy thing was just. And apparently that was wrong. So.
Maybe not, though. I mean, honestly, like, so I had somebody on the podcast, I guess it was probably in the spring, and we had a long talk about the clitoris. Mm-hmm. And the clitoris is a lot bigger than we think that it is. It actually, like, it comes here in the part that you actually see.
Yeah.
And it comes down on either side. So it's a lot bigger than we think that it is. And it does get more engorged when they're turned on. So maybe your friend was just like really, really ahead of.
Right. Yeah.
Sex education.
I think his dad probably thought it was really funny to tell him that. If you knew his dad, you would understand that is probably some misinformation from his dad. Chuckle out of it. So
that's good.
But did you, when you grew up, did you have a household that was open about that kind of stuff or not so much?
Yeah. My situation was kind of unique, actually. I guess that kind of leads into another story.
Cool.
Which is, I started masturbating really, really young. I was 3.
Oh, wow.
And you know, it's normal for kids to kind of start like touching themselves or realizing that things feel good at that time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I haven't heard of many kids who actually could bring themselves to like orgasm at age 3.
Oh,
and
I could.
Wow.
And so I called it pushing my button and it actually fell under the umbrella of my obsessive compulsive disorder. So I was diagnosed with OCD when I was younger, and it was compulsively masturbating in public, no matter, I didn't care who was around, right? So I was really, really young, and it got to be more about numbers, which is what OCD is. It tells you, you know, intrusive thought, if you don't do this, then something bad will happen, so you have to do it this many number of times. So for years, between the time that I woke up and the time that I went to bed, I had to masturbate the number of years age that I was.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, it got to the point where friction is a thing and chafing is a thing. And so it gets to a point where it's not fun anymore, but I still felt like I had to do it. And, you know, yeah. when I told guys this in like college, they'd be like, I think I can take you on, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, right. number one, you can't. Number yeah. two, gross.
I'll make your head explode.
Yeah. but so I started really, really early. And because of that, my parents had to figure out how to deal with that. How do we deal with the kid who's doing this? And my dad, I think, was pretty weirded out by it. I'm the oldest and I'm the only girl. And so my dad was part of like a Irish Catholic family that was a little more repressed. And I think he kind of weirded him out a little bit. But he still was very good about being like, we do that in private. We don't do that in public. And my mom was always very good about being like, I'm glad that you're exploring your body, but this is something we do in our alone time in our bedroom. We don't do it, you know, at school. So I had that base of understanding what pleasure was, even though I didn't understand what it was that I was doing. I was just pushing my button.
Right.
So I had some sense of what it was, I guess. That's pretty spot on description. But I ended up, you know, I ended up getting medicated with Prozac because antidepressants can shut your libido down.
Right.
Yes, indeed.
And so as a 3-year-old, I was having my libido shut down by antidepressants.
Oh, wow.
And I've been on and off of Prozac my entire life, no longer for that reason, but for mental health reasons. And it's still very much, it was a soothing tool for me. It was an anxiety soothing tool, something that I could do. So my parents had to get really good at being more open about that. And my mom handled it beautifully. And then when I was, I think it must've been third grade. So I must've been around 8 years old. I was in math class and we were talking about shapes and we were talking about like, what's that like six-sided shape? And I said, sexagon, and everybody laughed. And I was like, why is everybody laughing at me? I don't understand. So I went home and I was like, Mom, you know, I said this today and everybody laughed. Like, why did everybody laugh at me? And she thought about it. And I don't know what she said in the moment, but we went up on like a vacation pretty soon thereafter. And she said, let's go for a walk. And so we went for a walk in the woods. Perfect place to talk about the birds and the bees. Mm-hmm. And she told me, and my mom's been a guest on my podcast, by the way.
Oh, too. Cool. That's so, awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
And so we went for a walk and she was like, sex is when a man and a woman love each other very much, and a man puts his penis into a woman's vagina. And I just remember thinking, how in the world, like, why do people do that? And she was like, well, it feels good. And I was like, how in the world could that possibly feel good? And she was like, it feels like pushing your button. And I was like, oh, okay.
Now I get it. Yeah.
I see. So, you know, and we talked about, my mom was really good at being like, sex is a really big responsibility because emotions come along with it. It's, you know, a lot of people do it strictly because it feels good physically, but emotions, she somehow explained about endorphins and dopamine that are released in the bonding chemicals over the course of sex in a way that an 8-year-old would understand.
Yeah.
And really hammered it home for me that it's a responsibility.
Yeah.
Especially for women who carry the burden of pregnancy if it happens.
Yeah.
And she was very focused on me understanding that because she wanted me to be able to make good choices and she wanted me to, you know, go to college and all those things. She told me, you know, she said, I would prefer if you waited till marriage to have sex. And she was like, but if you don't, and you decide that you meet somebody that you want to do that with, I don't want you to be afraid to come talk to me because if you're going to do it, I want you to do it safely.
That's cool.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So, and at that time, I remember saying to her, Mom, if it feels like pushing my button, I'm not waiting till I get married.
Well,
she was like, well, okay.
That was, I was sexually active pretty young and it was not a good choice because there's just, like you were saying, there's a lot that comes with that, that a mm-hmm. young mind is not ready to comprehend. And I was always, so I have three kids and So my way of handling that whole thing was like head on. Like, we are going to talk about, as soon as I see a signs of we're interested, we're talking about it. And I don't want it to ever be something that we can't talk about. And I think that that helped get rid of some of the stigma, because a lot of the reason I think that I was active when I was young is because I was curious, and sure. And I didn't have anybody I could go to and say, hey, you know, can you explain like what's happening here? Like, first of all, I think we can all agree sex is the best drug ever. Like, there is just something there. It's biologically in our makeup that we have this drive to do this. And, when you're young, you can't really understand why it's happening. It's just like, I am on 1,000% right now. You know, I am like, absolutely. For men, it's true, because testosterone it's overwhelming. It can be just, I mean, when you're a teen male, it's way overwhelming, and you don't know what to do with the energy, and it just gets you get crazy. And I remember, like, oh gosh, 20 some years ago, I had taken, much like yourself, I had taken an antidepressant for the first time. I was in my mid 20s at the time, and it took away all of my sexual desire, and I couldn't live with that. So I was like, man, I'm going to wean myself off that. We're big proponents of mental health here on the podcast, so we like to talk about those things. Against probably the doctor's advice, I weaned myself off of that. And just because I couldn't, I'm like, I would rather have issues mentally than not be able to just perform and like, you know, be active. Because at that age, you know, you're still young and wanting to go. And so I did that. Now, I did find a treatment that was much better suited for me. I found an alternative medication that was very good for me. I didn't have those side effects. So I don't want people to feel like there's only one option or whatever. You know, find something that suits you, and, you know, that you can have a fulfilling life in all areas, you know, but be healthy, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's the most important thing too, is like, that goes with therapy, that goes with medications. Like, if the first one doesn't work for you, that doesn't mean, I can see that it might put somebody off and be like, oh, if I had that experience with this medication, I'm not doing medication. Like, fuck that.
Yeah.
But you just got to find the right thing, the right cocktail of drugs, therapy, whatever that works for you.
Yeah,
it takes time.
It could be the individual therapist. It could be that, you know, whatever the doctor's cocktail that particular doctor is giving you is works for tons of other people, but it's not going to be one that works for you. You just have to say, it's not working. You know, or I'm still having these feelings, I'm still having this problem and struggle and stuff, and then you work your way to find out. And I'm the same way. I've been off and on medication for most, you know, I probably should have been heavily on medication in my teen years for depression. And, you know, I finally, in my, you know, late 30s, was able to find the right combination of things to where I feel now I'm like, oh, I guess this is normal. I don't know. Is this what regular people who feel, who are not always like, you know, I'm just a deep pit of despair all the time, or
right.
But it does have, it does have side effects. It has things, you know, not so much with my plumbing per se or my drive. But, like, you know, like, it does definitely some of the, like, for me being, I'm an artist, so sometimes my creativity is a little bit struggle to, like, get into something else, which is, you know, one of those things that the majority of creatives have that kind of depressive side to them that is kind of fuel for the fire, it seems. It's married to the same process. So when you find yourself in a better place, you know, sometimes you're not as necessarily, you don't have the creative drive as you used to have.
The art suffers. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, and I mean, someday Barry's going to have to talk with me, so I'll know about all of that stuff. But sexiness, yeah. But, you
that'll
know.
Be, but, so. That'll be when you turn 30, sir. Whenever that is.
Yeah, I'm perpetually 28. That's what
that's a dream, right?
has been decided. So, you know, we're only a year, we're less than a year apart in birthday. But Barry's still much older.
Old soul, so, perhaps.
Yeah.
No, I think I'm 34, and people are always like, "You look like you're 22, but you act like you're like 67." Like, yeah.
Well,
I just want to like water my plants and be left alone.
Talking about age, I mean, I think it's so important as human beings that like. To be a well-rounded person, you need sex, you need, you know, your health, you need to be creative, you need, all those things are what make us human beings, you know, and the more we can, like, accept that and you know, not try to push that down and push it away. I know that there's been times in my life when, you know, I'm like, I'm done being creative. I'm done with that. And it just boils over, you know, and it turns into something that's not healthy. And that, I think the same thing with sex, too. It's like, accept that, you know, that you are a sexual being and, you know, and, you know, obviously be safe. And, you know, and consensual always be, you know, at the forefront of everything that you do. But, you know, people, you know, they need to explore those things in their lives. And I think that you hear a lot of times when people try to repress that stuff, it comes out and it's not in, in the best of ways sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, it could be negative.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's very damaging psychically, psychologically to repress those very basic, you know, baser instincts, you know, so it could damage not only, you know, your own self and your own self-worth, but also those people in your relationships around you, you know, because like we were basically brought up the same way we were brought up to not have sex before marriage. Because Jesus, you know, because God doesn't want you to do that. And, you know, I was very much a late starter, in sex. I was, you know, I was in my mid 20s, the first time I had sex or full sex, I should say.
Full sex, P&V.
You know. And like by that time, you know, I was certainly I was definitely emotionally ready enough at that time. I think that, you know, if I had been younger, I would not have been as prepared for all the ramifications thereof. And, you know, because, you know, you have a partners and, you know, you're in relationships, and relationships come to end, especially, you know, and when physical relations end in an emotional relationship as well, it's all part of the package that can be very, very difficult to move past. And I was, you know, I mean, I hadn't had enough experience in relationships to sufficiently be, you know, where practicing that we're having sex on a, you know, would have been a good thing for my own, I guess, for myself. I don't know. But then again, you know, maybe I'm just saying that to kind of console myself for getting such a late start. I don't know.
I very intentionally stayed off of full-blown sex until I was older because, you know, I had this history. I knew I could take care of myself, like, and yeah, I knew... Yeah. And I also knew that I had a tendency to, I was afraid. And I, even though my mom didn't like engage in like slut shaming, I think there was still a little bit of that just in society in the 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, I was afraid because I had this uncontrollable drive, you know, when I wasn't on medication, I was worried that I would become a slut. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I very intentionally just didn't even go there. For that reason.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a weird thing.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I can see that. I could also see, I think, in myself a little bit of I don't know. Maybe I have a small bit of obsessive OCD. Mm. I don't know. I don't think. But it's like some, like, if I get eerily into something, I mean, like a new hobby, a new subject, or whatever, I'm like really into it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then, you know, and I just really, really get into it until eventually, you know, the shiny wears off or whatever. And I think that could have been a problematic thing to where, you know, if I had started at a younger age, where if I was going around and sleeping around like a lot of my peers,
right.
You know, or, you know, dudes, you know, because dudes can do it and it's all right, you know, whereas, you know, if girls do it, well, you know, they're, you know, that's, they're just gross.
Yeah.
You know, which is so stupid because people are like, but you, like, people are sexual creatures. We're sexual animals. And, you know, what's the difference between a girl who's had sex with five guys one time each than a girl who's had one partner but has had sex,
right,
you know, 500 right. times? You know, what's yeah. the difference? You know, and it's not like yeah. there's nothing to it. There's no difference between them. There's nothing to be compared. It's all individual experiences.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah. It's just again, and this just shows. Goes to show and underline the fact that even though it's 2024, we have come very, very far in a progression of ways of pushing shame away from sex. There's still a lot of people and a lot of shame that is wrapped up in that because of the way that we were raised, the way
absolutely.
You know, we were brought up, and then that's something that you know, like being brought up in the church. Untangling yourself from a lot of the not programming, but the things that you're indoctrinated in and taught,
yeah, mm-hmm.
and just trying to, you know, make your own life on your own terms. It's
right.
still difficult sometimes to separate.
Yeah,
you know, like I still romanticize sex quite a bit, whereas it can be not. You know, it doesn't always have to be like, you know, the expression of true love. It can just
yeah.
be.
Yeah. A lot of times it's just fun, or it's just
yeah.
like, you know, I'm bored. You want to do it. Out, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Okay, we got 20 minutes. Let's bang it out or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
That's, but, you know.
That's the confusing thing, though, when you're younger, is that you do have that chemical thing happen. And mm-hmm. I see it a lot, you know, in this part of the world because a lot of young people get married young. And, you know, they kind of latch on to that first partner that they have. And it's like, that person may not be good for you, but you're right. wrapped in that chemical thing and you can't get yourself free from it. And that's hard. And, man, I think that is, as long as, you know, as long as you're able to see things for what they are, the other hard thing to do, especially as you're a young person, is to allow that person that you're with to have their own life. Let them experience, mm-hmm. you know, you can obsess like Adam was talking about, or like just be so like, you know, controlling. I think as a young man, I was probably that too. And afraid that person is going to leave. And the more yeah. that you, the yeah, more that
that was a big thing for me.
You know, the more that you try to hold on to that, you
push them away.
Yeah, you push yeah. them away. You squander it.
Yeah, that yeah. was my experience. The first partner that I have, I've actually been working through this in a lot of therapy stuff. Like the first partner that I had was very much like that. There was a 2-year age difference, which I mean now not a big deal, right?
Right.
But when I was 14 and he was 16,
yeah, that's yeah. big.
Those are worlds away. So for he just sure. like wanted to like play with his dick all the time. And I wanted a boy who would kiss my forehead and tell me I was pretty, you know, right. and hold yeah, my hand in the hallways maybe. And so I very quickly got put into a position where I was pressured mm-hmm. and where he was very worried that I was going to leave. And so he became very controlling.
Yeah.
And that went on for a number of years, you know, and it's been difficult because it's so easy to villainize someone like that. But in reality, it's what you're talking about. Hormones are insane mm-hmm. and it's hard to control yourself. Mm-hmm. And there's just the fact of the matter that 2 years is just too much of an age difference and we shouldn't have, you know, sure. been together to begin with. My mom was right.
Yeah, right. That's sometimes difficult, right? You're like, okay, yeah. maybe there's a reason why they said that.
Yep.
But
yep.
at the same time, you know, you've lived through that and you understand that that perspective from a young kid's point of view, you know, and I think that's wonderful because it gives you now with your podcast and your platform, it gives you the ability to maybe you say something to a young girl that she's not thinking of at that point in time.
Right.
But you can say it in a way that isn't coming from mom or dad or
exactly. You know. Yeah, that's the goal. And I think, you know, empathy is first and foremost. My friends often tell me, they're like, you give people too much benefit of the doubt. You're too empathetic. And I'm always like, is there such a thing? And like, yeah, I need to work on my people pleasing and boundaries. Like, definitely. That's like a work in progress. Right.
Yeah.
But, I do think that people in general are not born bad.
Yeah.
And society just puts things on us. Our families put things on us. We put our things on ourselves. But at base, like, I try to find ways to empathize with people and to understand what they're going through.
Yeah.
And I think we need more of that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. We try to, and again, that's one of the reasons why we do this particular podcast is we have like a variety of subject matter. And, you know, and like, you know, one week we'll have someone who's a psychic and next was, you know, somebody who's a ghost. And then, you know, we have you who's had this, you know, really funny story. But that has launched us into this incredible conversation that we're having, you know, and our goal is to provide people platform to tell their stories, to share their experiences. And then we can have, you know, the conversations that are born out of those experiences in the relating to each other and sharing our stories as well is, you know, and that's the empathy. That's the getting to know somebody as a human being and understanding, you know, a little bit more about them and a little bit more about their lives. It could be a complete stranger. It could be somebody that we have known for all of our lives and grew up with. And I mean, they're still, Barry and I have been best friends for all of our lives. Our moms were pregnant at the same time. That's how far back we go. We're still finding out new things, new stories from each other, you know, for all of our lives. So, you know, it is that thing about empathizing is such a, it needs to be cultivated more. It would make us a better society if we not just said that we, you know, care about people and care about things, but we actually do that and demonstrate it. And we all try to, you know, because if you care about somebody or at least give them the benefit of the doubt, you know, as a whole, we'll be able to accomplish more things because you're able to kind of cover more ground and you'll be able to build bridges and try to see somebody else's point of view, understand their experiences, what has developed and made them to where they are and why they behave the way they are, why they think the way they do, which you may not agree with, but having a little bit of more understanding and compassion for that person on the basic human level, instead of just vilify them for not believing, thinking, or whatever, living the way you do.
Absolutely. You know, yeah, and that's something I say a lot. It's kind of become a thing in my friend group where they say it before I even can because they know I'm going to say it. But it's an explanation, not an excuse.
Yes.
So having empathy enough to figure out, like, okay, I understand that my ex-boyfriend who hurt me, who is not my current partner or the ex-boyfriend from the earlier story, I understand that he didn't have the tools and that he was raised in a very religious household that was basically a cult, you know, and that I understand why he is the way he is. And I understand why that caused him to treat me the way that he did. It doesn't excuse that behavior, but it does help a little bit.
Yeah. And it doesn't nullify the emotions that you've experienced and have, but it does help you understand a little bit more. And by understanding, you're able to grow and progress and let go of some of the negative effects.
Absolutely. Negative
feelings and stuff. Yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So let's real quick, how can people get in touch with you and plug the name of your podcast again for everybody?
Absolutely. The podcast is called Wine, Dine, and 69. And this is a great example of it. I created that name because it's about dating, relationship, sex, all kind of through the prism of self-love and mental health. But I wanted to create something that would be titillating in the title, but that would lead to, I want people to come for the title, but to stay for the conversations.
Sure.
So you can find that on Spotify, any podcatcher, wherever you find podcasts. I'm on all social medias.
Followed on Spotify myself.
Awesome. Yeah. We just came off of, we meaning me, just came off of, I say we all the time. Like, it's literally just me. I don't know why I say we. we just came off of a summer break. So I'm going to be bringing back the next episode on September 6th.
Oh, cool. Very good. Is that a weekly thing or... How often
it is. It's interesting you ask that. It is bi-weekly, and it has been historically. That's going to be changing. I'm trying to figure out some things in my career life right now, and so I don't have the time to make the podcast what I want it to be, the quality that I want it to be.
Yep.
So for the rest of 2024, I'm going to kind of change the format and do one a month.
Okay.
And then we'll see what happens in 2025.
Cool, man. That's awesome. Cool. We appreciate you coming on. This has been, it's been refreshing because we've had so many other topics, but this is one that I thought it was a great conversation, man.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, thanks. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. This is very unique as far as what we've heard. I've had any stories and episodes themed around. So it is very refreshing. It's also great because, again, we get to expand the categories and the stories, and we get to, it encourages people to be like, oh, well, maybe that one story I have is a little too salacious, a little too this or that. And it's like, we don't care. We just love hearing good stories. Hearing good stories, whatever it is. You know, we started off doing the weird stuff because we wanted people to share the story, give them a safe place to share stories that they don't normally share. People look at them kind of, you know, one way or the side eyed or whatever. But, you know, we've really just opened it up to, like, we want to hear your stories, stories. Right. We want to meet the people and we want to make new friends and new connections and hear, you know, experience life in a broader sense through the connections that this is how we used to do it back in the old days. You know, when you would meet somebody, you would sit down and talk to them, share stories, have conversations and all of that. And this is, you know, it's one of the key, I think it's one of the key things in that makes us humans as well as sex and all the other good stuff.
Absolutely.
Cool, Rachel. Well, we appreciate it. You go enjoy the rest of your evening, whatever's left of it.
Thank you. And stay in touch.
Yeah, you too. Anytime you want to come back, you can.
Awesome.
Love to have you. Hey, you know what we need?
What's that?
We need a new ad for our merch store.
Our merch store.
I've had a few people reach out to me and ask me, just how do we get What's Your Weird Story merch?
How do we get that What's Your Weird Story merch?
What's-your, spelled Y-E-R, dash, weird, dash, story, dot, myspreadshop.com.
That's what's-your, spelled Y-E-R, dash, weird, dash, story, dot, myspreadshop.com.
That's correct. Get in touch with us. Go buy some merch. We got some cool stuff.
Yeah, dude. And you know what? If any of our listeners out there has some really cool ideas or has some really cool What's Your Weird Story type art that they want to see on a t-shirt, get a hold of us. Maybe it'll happen.
Well, Rachel, thank you for coming on, and what a calamity of events. You know, I mean, whoever thought a BJ would end with a spinal tap? That is amazing.
Oh, man. Yeah, that is not the finish that anybody wants. Unless that's your kink, that's your thing. No, you know, we're not trying to kink shame you, but I would hazard a guess that that's not how anybody wants to finish. Hilarious. Really, the human body is amazing in how it can react to different stimulation.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, and it's funny because, you know, they were hesitant to tell the doctors in the ER exactly, you know, what was causing, or he was more hesitant than she, right. You know.
Yeah.
But once he said, "Oh, you know, we were sexing," and immediately they were like, "Oh yeah, okay, we know exactly what it is,"
which is amazing. I just never heard of that ever. So apparently, yeah. That's a lane in the OR that
that can happen to you. You know, you hear for, you know, the people who have sex trips to the ER, you hear about, you know. Especially from ER nurses, which by the way, open door to anybody who works in ER for anything. We love those stories, or first responders. But you always hear about people getting things, you know, stuck up in them.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. Very common.
That's a very, very common thing.
Yep.
And I knew a guy who had who suffered from priapism. Okay. Which is that's when you have an erection and it won't go down.
Oh.
And you know, that's why it sounds like it's a, you know, that might not be a problem, but it is a problem. It starts to hurt, you know, I mean, and like,
yeah,
you know, if it goes on for hours, you know, it can be very, very painful.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he was telling me he did everything that he knew of to try to get rid of it.
Right.
And nothing worked.
Wow.
So it just stayed. So, you know, so he had to go to the ER, and he said this very pretty nurse stuck syringes in his penis and drained the blood out.
Oh,
they had to bleed it out. That's how they fixed it. So
that wasn't chemically induced. It was just
was just he had. I don't think it was chemically induced. I think it was just one day.
Wow!
It just, you know, the demon did not.
Did that ever happen to him again, or was that a one time?
I don't know if it has happened to him again. I haven't heard from him again about that particularly. Damn. But yeah.
Wow.
And because he said it. Was very painful before getting it relieved. Even it was very painful because, you know, it's all that blood going there, engorging the muscle for so many hours and hours and hours. It's very painful.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, and he's done it. He's tried to, you know, alleviate that in the usual manual ways.
Right.
You know.
No release.
So they had to do that. They had to bleed it out. So, yeah, I mean, it's unusual. It's amazing. The human body is so weird in itself. It's so complex.
It is.
And the fact that we know as much as we do at this point in time. And also the fact that there's so much that we don't know is still pretty amazing.
For sure. Yeah. I thought hopefully our listeners thought that we handled that conversation in a good way. And
I think we handled it fairly maturely all around.
Yeah, for sure. We had
some giggles.
Yeah, we had fun. That's what you're supposed to do. You know, it was awesome. But yeah, Rachel, awesome. Awesome. Having you on check out her podcast. Is it Wine Dine in 69? Is that the name of it? And check her out.
It's a great podcast.
Yeah, she's very entertaining.
And we hope to have her back in the future for some more discussions, and not just for the sexual hijinks, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
We welcome those as well.
Absolutely.
This is, you know, again, going to show how we love all kinds of stories on the podcast. We pretty much have drawn the line at scatological stories, you know. We're not going to get into too many poop stories. We have some good ones that people have shared.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, we were going to put out a special episode, but that's, you know, we're drawing the line there. You know, if you want to hear those, let us know. Maybe we'll put together a special episode that you know, a special request episode you can listen to. They're funny, but, you know, it's
a shit compilation.
Yeah, really.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely reach out to us. Come on the podcast. You know, we know you've got some kind of story to tell. Everybody does. I'm, you know, at the wedding, I got lots of fun stories. You know, my family sat around and we just told stories for a couple hours. And, you know, that's really what it's about, man. It's making connections with people. You tell stories that maybe the kids haven't heard. You know, you get to know each other through stories. And that's really what it's all about. We enjoy talking to people from all walks of life and listening to all types of different stories, and we love them all.
It's what gives us life. It gets us going, and it's what brings us back here and to Weirdsville every week, and we hope that's what brings you back here too. So join us. Follow us on your on the Instagram and the Facebook and the social medias, and email us. Contact us through those same outlets. Make sure you like, follow, and subscribe to us on wherever you listen to us, whatever you're, you know, on your podcast provider of choice. And join us next time where we've got some more goodies for you, and of a more a less explicit nature.
But that's okay too.
That's okay too. Yes. So let us know. Send us your comments. What you thought about this episode? If you've had any kind of interesting experiences, email us or you know, and let us know. Share them either through email or come on the show and tell us about those. We love hearing from you guys. We love you, Weirdsville. Thanks again so much, Rachel, for just incredible discussion and a really hilarious story there. Once again, so until next time, my friend Barry, congratulations to you and all your new family.
Thank you.
And for Kira and all of that. And thank you for listening, Weirdsville. We appreciate all your support and everybody listening and sharing the podcast. We will see you next time here at the What's Your Weird Story podcast. I'm Adam Beebe. That's Barry Johnston. Be safe.
Be weird.
As always, if you have a weird story, we want to hear it.
If you have a lot of them, we want to hear them all.
We can't do this podcast without your invaluable contributions.
Whether it's sharing your stories,
listening,
rating,
and spreading the word about the podcast. Thanks for listening. Till next time, be safe.
Be weird.
The stories presented on the What's Your Weird Story podcast are, to our knowledge, true experiences that our guests have had. We can't take the time to research all claims made, and besides, it's just not as fun.